Welcome to the Workology Podcast, where we discuss the science and art of the workplace, gain powerful insights, resources, and perspectives on the industries of human resources and recruiting. Join your host, Jessica Miller-Merrill, chief blogger of bloggingforjobs.com, for a 45-minute in-depth and no-holds-barred look into the future of our most powerful business asset, the employee. And now, here's your host, Jessica, with this episode of Workology.
I'm one of the type A personalities who often overcommits and has a hard time saying no to things. Burnout predominantly happens to high performers and is sometimes described as overachiever syndrome, which I am unfortunately inflicted with. This year, I'm taking a step back and working less in order to achieve more personally and professionally. Welcome to the Workology Podcast. It's great to have you on our podcast as part of the Blogging for Jobs family. Today, we're going to be talking a little bit about downtime and how it might drive passion. My guest today is Ryan Estes. Ryan is a well-known speaker, and he helps companies embrace change and achieve breakthrough performance. Welcome to the podcast, Ryan. Tell us a little bit about yourself, and who's Ryan Estes?
Well, thank you for having me. So I know we're going to focus on work today, so I'll give you just a little bit of quick background. I spent the first 15 years of my career working in the advertising industry. I worked for one agency. We were acquired in 2000 by the Interpublic Group of companies. So I spent 8 years working for the second largest communications company in the world. The last 4 years I was there, I was in the role of chief strategy officer for about a $200 million business. And actually exited that industry and that business pretty abruptly in January of 2009 to start my own consulting company. So at that time, I had two partners, and we went out and picked up a couple of consulting contracts and were really inventing this new business as we went along. And you know, my business continued to change and evolve and expand. And a couple of years ago, we hit an inflection point. You mentioned the speaking part of my business. I had been speaking as part of my role with the ad agency at trade associations. And then when I launched the consulting practice, continued to do it really to promote the new business. And it was a revenue stream for us really at its inception. But a couple of years ago, hit an inflection point. And that became my focus or concentration, was really the learning side of the business. And so today, we do about 70 live events annually focused on business performance, predominantly leadership and sales. And those are keynote speeches and half and full day courses. So it's been a fun ride for me to today. So it's good to be on the podcast.
70 is a lot. That's a lot of air travel time, I think.
It's Delta Diamond, and yes, it is a lot of time in the air, and it's truthfully probably spending more nights sleeping in hotel rooms than in my own bed. And that, I don't know that it'll always be that way, but that's certainly what it's been the last couple of years as we build out this side of the business.
As I mentioned, today's topic is how downtime drives passion. And as Ryan is describing his travels and his business, it sounds like, wow, 70, you know, events over the course of a year. Is there any downtime? But I want to first talk about passion and ask you, why is passion so important for us to work in and be well in, not just in work, but also in life?
Well, I think, you know, and I think you could probably ask 10 people and get 10 different definitions of passion. But if you think about it, passion's excitement, it's energy and enthusiasm. And I think, you know, ultimately, when you have excitement and enthusiasm and energy toward whatever it is you're doing in work or in life, you know, it tends to lead towards more joy and fulfillment and happiness. And I think, you know, I think those things are things that most people covet. And when you specifically, you know, slice it out and you look at the world of work, I mean, we're struggling today. I mentioned this offline, but I just finished this morning doing a webinar with my research partner, Modern Survey, and we talked a lot about the idea of employee engagement And you know, today, I mean, only 44% of the U.S. workforce is classified as engaged. So, one, from a performance perspective, you know, we're leaving tons of potential contribution on the table in most of our organizations. And number two, from a personal perspective, you know, you spend 8, 10, 12 hours a day doing something where you're really unhappy. That bleeds over into other areas of life. And I frankly see that every week in the work that I do.
Well, and I will say that having heard you speak and you and I have been knowing each other for a while, everything Ryan does, he just kind of oozes passion. I mean, you hear him up on the stage when he's giving the keynotes and you just want, you can't wait. You don't want the speech to be over, but at the same time, you're so excited for the speech to be over because then you can go out and conquer the world. I mean, that is, Ryan exudes passion, certainly. And I truly believe that. I think that, your message is really inspiring. And I think that talking about passion is extremely important. As you mentioned, that people often think that passion is maybe separate from your work. Maybe it's a hobby or a personal thing. And I am of the belief that they bleed into one another, that if you have passion at work or you have you don't have passion at work, you're not going to be passionate at home or in your personal life.
I agree with you. And thank you for the generous compliment. I appreciate it. And I'll say that, you know, part of that possibly is reflected in the fact that my work today is very personal to me because I went through this evolution myself. You know, I mentioned I left an organization where I'd spent 15 years rather abruptly in January of 2009. And that was not a great time to quit your job without a plan B. But it stemmed from the fact that, you know, I spent a couple of years actually feeling very unfulfilled and disengaged from my work. And it did affect my personal life. It affected my whole life. And you know, I think that's the case for a lot of people today. I mean, I'm in these conversations on a regular basis. And part of that is because I think our approach to work has changed. We're so much more connected now. It's oftentimes requiring a 24/7 commitment or at least a connection to it, and it's hard to create that separation. You know, people talk about balance. I actually call it the work-life blend. I mean, you've got to figure out a way to kind of incorporate work and life and manage those things in a way that works for you. So I think the expectations in the workplace are changing, and we're experiencing so much change and so much uncertainty. So, you know, I know personally what it was like to get up every day and not be excited or not have energy or not feel good about what I was doing. And I was stuck in that place, frankly, for a couple of years. And it took a lot of guts to, encourage, at least for me personally. In hindsight, it doesn't seem like a big deal. But at the time, after 15 years invested in where I was in my stage of life and my career, it felt like a big risk. But I navigated that and came out of it on the other side. And so, you know, I have some personal attachment, I think, in some respect to the work I get to do now.
I think that being an entrepreneur and making that leap is, I also left my employer rather abruptly. And that fear of unknown is a lot what holds you back. But what I also felt in working for myself and doing what I loved, which, you know, I started this crazy blog and now it's my career, is that it was really awesome because every day I could go to work and just be really excited. Some days are good, some days are bad, but for the most part, because I'm doing what I love.
Well, I think that's true. I mean, you're an example of, you know, what happens when you can, you know, you can find that intersection of work and being passionate about it. And, you know, I look back on it now and I think, you know, we think about the fear that kind of keeps us stuck or maybe in a place that we don't want to be. But I think in some respects, you know, in the world of work today, there can be some false confidence attached to, you know, what security is or what the future may hold. And, you know, actually navigating the last 6 years, I actually feel more secure today than I ever have in my career because ultimately I'm in control of my own destiny and in control of the outcome. And I think, you know, that's obviously one of the benefits of being an entrepreneur. And I'll also say this, you know, we're talking about balance and passion and you initiated the podcast talking about downtime. And, you know, I mentioned, hey, 70 events. I mean, I've never worked harder and I've probably never worked more at any time in my career than I do now. But I also find increasingly when I'm focused on the right things and I'm passionate about it, it doesn't all the time feel very much like work. And that's a pretty valuable thing. And that control and that freedom and those choices are something that I place a tremendous amount of value on today.
Well, let's shift a little bit back from the entrepreneur side of things and talk more about the corporate or the workplace side of things. And I wanted to ask you, how can managers and business leaders promote passion at their workplace?
Yeah, I'll, you know, we talked about this in the webinar this morning, and there's some good research that actually validates this. But, you know, there are three specific things that we talked about managers being able to do that I think promotes passion, engagement, you know, enthusiasm and a connection to the work. And the first one were about values. You know, there's some modern survey, some really interesting research around this, that when core values are fully known and understood, that employees are 38 times more likely to be fully engaged. And so when you think about, you know, where we are today and the opportunity for improvement, you know, having clearly communicated values, you know, and making sure everybody understands how to get the work done is so critical. I often say this, it's not what you're doing, but it's how you're doing the work and who you're doing the work with that ultimately, you know, fuels passion and drives engagement. So, you know, that was a big one. Another area of focus for leaders is trust. I mean, in the absence of trust, you're going to have a real hard time finding an engaged, passionate workforce. And today, you know, another compelling statistic, only 47% of employees in the U.S. have trust or confidence in their senior leadership. So we really have a trust gap. And I think, you know, employees are starving for more consistent communication and confidence in the future. And that's something leadership needs to provide. And you know, the way to bridge that gap is through more consistent communication. You know, and I think we have more tools and technology, you know, to connect to one another and for leaders to communicate and help align an organization, you know, toward a common purpose or shared goals. And we need to give it to people. So I think those are three areas of focus. You know, if you look at values, trust, and communication, I mean, in a very uncertain world, employees want and need more confidence in their leaders and in the future of the organization. And I think those are important things to focus on.
I would say that every employee survey I have ever done in my HR career, these three areas have come up as a top five challenge or opportunity for an employer. And I do think that passion and engagement and all these different pieces can be, the problems can all the way, can't be completely solved, but certainly values, trust, and communication can go a long way.
Yeah, I agree with you. You know, when you look at drivers, like what are the things that drive engagement and fuel passion? I mean, employees want to be confident about the future of the organization. They want to feel like they're in a good place. And, you know, so communicating, you know, vision, future direction, 2020, being really transparent about where the organization's going, that's important. Another big driver today is growth and development. People want to work for a manager and for an organization that is investing in growing their skills and competency because things are changing so fast. And then actually a third big one, and the research shows that, is it's a sense of personal accomplishment. It's, you know, it's meaning and fulfillment, feeling like your work matters. And that certainly is a something that can ignite passion and drive engagement. So I think those are some key areas of focus for leaders.
Can you provide us, or do you have any examples of how passion can drive change within an organization?
Yeah, you know, I've done writing around this, and so I'll highlight a couple of examples. And it's been a couple of years, but I think the case studies are still really, really relevant. I wrote a white paper called Winning with Culture, and we profiled three companies in the white paper. And one of my favorites is, you know, Farm Credit. They're in the agricultural insurance industry in Omaha, Nebraska. Not a household name, not a sexy business, but 92% of their employees are fully engaged. And a lot of it is a reflection of how the organization is led. I've gotten to know their CEO, Doug Stark, well, and you know, he he's a big proponent of, you know, put people first. I mean, it's a real simple philosophy, a straightforward philosophy. You know, you put people first and ultimately performance and profitability follow, but it's the right people doing the right things. It's a big values-driven culture. We unpack some of the specific things they're focused on in doing in that white paper. So, you know, that's one specific example. I'll give you another one too. And I wrote a blog post about this, the accounting firm McGladrey. And you talk about change. And they're undergoing a pretty significant change and transformation initiative. They're 5 years into this cultural transformation journey. And I've gotten to spend a little time with their executive team. And I interviewed for the blog their COO, Mike Curley. And look, they're getting tremendous commitment and performance around some of their change initiatives. But, you know, a couple things that he called out. I mean, number one, it's hard work. You have to create alignment on the leadership team. Culture is a reflection of how they lead. And he's got a great way of kind of summarizing the commitment that's required of leadership. And he calls it future making. You know, it's his belief system that great leaders are future makers, meaning they have a compelling vision of the future of the organization, but that's not enough. They have to proactively enroll and enlist and bring other people along. And, you know, when you make specific commitments like that, when you draw a line in the sand, when you lead by example and you do the right things, you know, it's pretty inspiring to see the type of change and the impact on performance that passion, engagement, and commitment can have. So those are a couple of quick examples. And then I've got some supporting resources that, you know, your audience may, you know, want to, if they want to dive in deeper, I think would be real interesting.
Awesome. And so for those of you listening, you can go directly to Ryan's site, and he has a great blog over there. It's just ryanestis.com. Also, I will make sure if you go to Blogging for Jobs, we'll be linking to a lot of the things that Ryan's mentioning over the course of this podcast under the resource section. So you can just click through and get hopefully most of the resources that you need. And I would just go to the right-hand search sidebar and click and put in Ryan Estis podcast, and it'll get you directly to this episode. Let's take a little bit of a reset. This is Jessica Miller Merrill, and you are listening to the Workology podcast powered by Blogging for Jobs. Today's topic is how downtime can drive passion with my guest, Ryan Estis. You can also connect with Ryan on Twitter at Ryan Estis, and that's RyanEstis. And Ryan's active on social media. He is also active on Facebook as well. I love his blogs in particular. And Ryan recently wrote a blog where he talked about his commitment, his new commitment to downtime, which kind of inspired this interview with Ryan. Once again, I'll include the link to Ryan's website and everything in the podcast transcript. Can you talk a little bit about your new commitment to downtime and how it has transformed your business?
Sure. So, you know, we mentioned the 70 live events a year. So it's a lot of travel. And I got to a point, I mean, you know, quite honestly, I mean, I almost hit a wall, you know, where I felt like, you know, all of my time was being consumed by working in the business, and it didn't leave enough time to work on the business or create the future. And so for me, it really was just, you know, creating more time and space and capacity to really think about not only where I was going to be this year, but where I wanted the business to be in 5 years. So I made some specific choices around that. And I think, you know, one of the blog posts you mentioned, one of the things we did was decided this summer that we were only going to work 4 days, you know, Fridays off and no events or speaking, you know, Friday through Sunday. And that was a bit of a shift, and it meant saying no to some work and turning some things down. But, you know, in addition to creating some capacity for me to think about the future, it also created a lot of renewal. And I think I came into this fall with just a lot more energy reinvigorated around the work I was doing. And I had probably the strongest stretch of, you know, execution and work output in my business that I've had in the 6 years that I've started it. And it was a lesson for me. It was a lesson for me that downtime matters. It's important to renew and refresh. But also, if you want to be innovative and create what's next and new, you have to give yourself the space and capacity to do it. So that that commitment is expanding as we move into 2015. We're going to do the four-day work week again this summer, and I've taken the policy of not speaking and not doing events on the weekends, and I'm expanding that to include the entire year, so no more Saturday and Sunday events. And I'm also protecting big gaps of, you know, chunks of time in my calendar where I'll actually shift from doing the live events and focusing on kind of our primary revenue stream today to kind of creating more think time so I can build what's next for tomorrow. And I'm enjoying the work, I think, in part because of that more than I ever have before.
I am definitely of the belief of being able to trying to have downtime. And I kind of took a little bit of a zero meeting hiatus between Thanksgiving and the New Year, where for the most part, I would only have two or three meetings and they were just essential ones. I didn't really do my regular, because sometimes I will schedule myself 36 meetings in an entire week singly. And that's a lot. It doesn't make for a lot of downtime. And I found that by having that time to just think and kind of work through and kind of get my personal and professional house in order, that it has made it so much more enjoyable for my team and for my family. I personally have expanded on that, and I don't take meetings normally Mondays or Fridays. And those are just days where I can work on small projects or Great. Catch up a little bit. And it's amazing how much better it makes you feel.
Yeah, I think that's true. And when you feel better, you work better. When you have that energy and that renewed feeling, you're able to approach the next day in a completely different way. You talked about burnout. I mean, that just stifles innovation. And I think, you know, as two entrepreneurs, you know, and I think we're both fortunate. We've reached a point now where we have, you know, the power to make some of those decisions in our business. But actually, you know, I work with a lot of large companies. And so I'll challenge leaders and executives today and, you know, that talk about innovation, and I'll ask them where it comes from. And obviously it comes from people. And so, you know, we pose the question, when do you give your people time to do nothing but think and create what is next? And Jim Collins, I'm a big fan of his work. You know, he wrote Good to Great and Built to Last. I mean, he has a formula for it. He suggests 10 hours for every 2 weeks of work, that you need to give people time and space and capacity to think creatively, particularly knowledge workers, and particularly if that's the expectation or part of the job. But, you know, if you want to be innovative and disruptive and continue to iterate or evolve as a team, a function, a business, an organization, you have to give people time to think and create and renew. And I agree with you, Jessica. It's been a huge benefit to me and a huge benefit to my business.
So let me ask you, and let me kind of back up here for a second. There was recently an interview with Marissa Mayer, who's now the CEO of Yahoo, who talks about the myth that exists about Google and how they allow for a certain amount of time. I think it's 20% of your time to be able to think and develop and design and just kind of be innovative. And in the interview, which I'll post the link to this, she says that you were still required to do 100% of your job, but that time for 20% of innovation and creativity meant that you would put in an extra 20% of time. So you're working 100%, 120% of capacity. And that for me was kind of a disappointing, but I wanted to ask you, what suggestions or examples can you provide leaders, HR pros, folks out there to help kind of see what downtime is? It's not just always a day off. What does that look like for different companies?
A lot of the companies that I work with, I think what it involves is autonomy or discretion, or giving people more autonomy and discretion in how they manage their time and creating clearly defined expectations and managing toward a result, but not necessarily the amount of time you're focused on doing something. And a lot of the companies I work with, I think, are building in more autonomy, more flexibility, and more freedom. I'll tell you a great document that people could access it. You could link to this in the podcast. And a company that I think has done a wonderful job of this is Netflix. And they published this document called The Freedom and Responsibility Culture. And it speaks specifically to you know, some of the things we were talking about, trust and values and communication and their culture and how they do the work. But they really give their people an incredible amount of autonomy and discretion relative to how they accomplish their results, up to and including vacation time. You talk about kind of an HR policy. The vacation policy at Netflix is there is no policy. When you need to take some time off, you take some time off, and you're still going to be held accountable to results. And I'm sure based on teams and projects, you know, there's communication that has to transpire around that. But the point is, you know, they're not managing toward how many hours you clock in or what time you get into the office. They're managing toward a result. And I don't know, you know, Marissa, and I've read a lot about her transition from Google to Yahoo. And I think her work ethic and the amount of hours she put in at Google were legendary, and the whole kind of bring everybody back into the office. You know, the Yahoo situation was unique. I mean, they were in a turnaround situation. I mean, she basically came in to save that business. And probably had to clean up some things that, you know, weren't trending or tracking in the right direction. And so, you know, again, I don't know her. I've never met her. I'm not going to speak to her personally. But, you know, those are some of the trends that I see. And I think, you know, good leaders that have hired the right people and have created alignment and shared values and a commitment toward a common purpose and results are able to provide more autonomy and discretion with how the work gets done.
I'll just say I have some friends who have worked at Yahoo and were there when Marissa made the announcement to have everybody come back into the office. And the reasoning from several of my friends, and I can say this, I've seen it firsthand having lived in the Bay Area, is that everyone has a side hustle in Northern California. Yeah. And so lots of people were working from home or working remote, and they weren't really working. And maybe they were spending more of their time building their newest app or business. And there's probably a couple of offenders that unfortunately resulted in the, you know, pulling things back a little bit and changing policy. But from three of my friends that worked over at Yahoo, that was the reasoning that for the decision. Everybody had a side hustle and not as much stuff was getting done.
Yeah. And, you know, there are things that clearly needed to be fixed. And I think, you know, that might've been an all hands on deck situation and corrective action needed to be taken. And, you know, I completely understand that, you know, and I work with a lot of sales organizations and, you know, I'm fond of sharing this idea with sales leaders that in the absence of results, we'll take, you know, we'll give activity a much closer and more thorough inspection. But, you know, when you get great results, you've got the right people and they're engaged and passionate about what they're doing. That's a pretty fun way to run a growing company.
Agreed. It's not always about the number of hours you put in. It's the amount of quality work that you do and what you get done. This year, I personally been focusing on self-improvement, learning, and awareness, and I'm committed to quality versus quantity in everything I'm doing, from family time to meetings that I'm scheduling for work. And just this week, I finished up reading Gretchen Rubin's The Happiness Project. I recommend that you check it out. She kind of goes through the entire year of a project around happiness and the different things that she focused on to be able to be happier. It's a little bit subjective, but it was a really good read. And of course, as a lover of podcasts and audiobooks, I did that while on the treadmill at the gym much of my time. So I wanted to ask you, Ryan, how do you incorporate downtime into your schedule, or how do you suggest others might consider doing that?
Yeah, you know, two things. I mean, one is as far as downtime goes, I schedule it, you know, and I can tell you, I'll give you a very specific example. So I have a workout scheduled today at 5 p.m. and I'm meeting somebody else at the gym to work out with them at 5 p.m. That hour, that block of time is non-negotiable. It's you know, if we get off this podcast and there's a crisis that erupts or a client needs me or Lynn in my office have questions, whatever it is, that hour is booked and it's blocked. And so I think, you know, scheduling that time and managing my schedule that way has enabled two things. One, it's enabled me to be probably more efficient with the hours I have. You know, I'm not putting things off, like, oh, I can get to that tonight, or I'm not messing around on social media during the day knowing, oh, I'll start that at 5 o'clock. No, I need to be efficient and effective in the allotted time I have to, you know, write a blog post, do a discovery call, prep for an event, whatever it is, because at 5 o'clock, that's the commitment I've made. So really being more specific and managing my schedule, I think has been helpful. The other thing you mentioned, actually, which was learning, you know, your commitment to learning and taking time for yourself. You know, when I got a little stuck, or when I find myself getting stuck, what coincidentally seems to come out of that is that I've really been lax on my commitment to learning. And I think creating the time and space to learn, to read, self-improvement, I've made it also, coincidentally, a much bigger commitment and emphasis on that in 2014. And I find that that's such a useful catalyst for getting me unstuck and focused on the right thing. So I think, you know, those are two things: scheduling, learning. And then the third thing, and it's something that came out of the learning for me that I've really been spending time focusing on the last few months, is my morning routine. You know, that first hour of the day, I think, is so critical to setting the intention of the day and setting yourself up for success. So I, you know, that first hour of the day, I get up early, but that first hour really is mine. I mean, I take some time to think and strategize and reflect a little bit. You know, I've written a blog post about, you know, my morning routine, practicing gratitude, and just being really prepared to be effective when I hit my desk at 8 a.m. And, you know, that having kind of that consistent morning routine wherever I am in the world, I think has helped me be a lot more effective and maintain a schedule that provides a little more balance. So.
Structure is a good thing, and holding yourself accountable is definitely a good thing, whether it's scheduling your downtime or having a morning routine. I'm in complete agreement with that. We had Susan Fowler on last week's podcast, where we talked about the science behind employee motivation, and she talked about the difference between motivation and employee engagement. I wanted to ask you, how do you think passion is different than employee engagement?
You know, I mean, the way kind of a I'll kind of give you my thoughts. I mean, a textbook definition. So the definition of engagement that we used on the call today, and I want to give Modern Survey credit for this. It's the degree to which employees are psychologically invested in the organization and motivated to contribute to its success. And the outcome of that is discretionary effort. So when you get the psychological commitment, right, we talked about the drivers that create that, you get the motivation and the contribution and the passion and commitment. So I think they're very related. I think obviously elevating engagement drives motivation and passion. So to me, that maybe is the slight difference or the connection. But I, you know, certainly in my eyes, they're very related.
And obviously, in looking at some of your YouTube videos and different things, you have a really great video, by the way, about creativity and making time to do that. Obviously, your thought is that passion is really linked to creativity. How do you make time for creativity, or how do you focus on creativity?
Yeah, I mean, I go back to the schedule, right? And so, you know, creativity is really an interesting one. I've found that some of my most creative thinking occurs when I'm fully committed to stepping completely away from the business. And so, you know, really, really actually vacation time, you know, getting up in the morning when I'm at a beach or somewhere different, and I'm journaling, or I'm writing, or I'm taking a walk, or I'm talking to a friend, it comes from stepping away. I think it can come through learning, you know, listening to the podcast at the gym, reading, meditating during my morning routine. But there's something about disconnecting and that kind of quiet solitude and reflection that I think actually feels creative energy. And so, you know, a lot of this is energy, right? It's, you know, passion is about energy and excitement and enthusiasm. You know, creative energy is a little bit different, but I think it's related. So, you know, it's really giving myself that space and that time for creative thinking and experimenting and learning and having the right kind of conversations with the right kind of people. And it's just what I wasn't doing 2 years ago, I wasn't creating time for that, right? I wasn't making space for that in my schedule and my approach to work and my approach to life. And so I think, you know, that's been a bit of a wake-up call or a bit of a shift for me, and it's why I'm scheduling my work time accordingly now. So, and let's face it, I mean, we all need, you know, it is about, I'm not just a one track person. I mean, I get, you know, I'm fueled, my passion is fueled by other interests outside of just my work, which certainly has been the focus of the call, but my, you know, my friends and family, sports and recreation. I love basketball. I like to practice yoga. I just learned how to surf and took lessons, which was really cool. So, you know, I enjoy other things outside of work, and it's about, to me, it's about making time to do that. And that fuels my energy and creativity as well.
So I guess your advice for somebody who's just getting started to add passion to their personal or professional life is probably to make time and then to do other things outside of work or life, like trying new things.
I think, and it's interesting, you know, one of my next blog posts, the title of the post is going to be about, called Trying New Things. And I didn't even intend to bring that up on the call, but, you know, it's probably worth mentioning. I do think that is a way to reignite passion or actually learn a lot about yourself. So yeah, managing my schedule has been huge for me because it's made me more productive and more efficient. I think knowing what I want and where I'm going, having a plan and a vision for the future, and then managing my time accordingly. And something else you and I talked about offline that's been huge for me in the past 12 to 18 months is also learning how to say no. I think when we're early in our career, we're figuring out where we want to go, or certainly when we're just starting a business. And I think certainly this probably stems from my sales orientation as well. We have a desire to want to say yes. And I'm a pleaser. I'm certainly very much that way. I want to be in yes mode all the time. But you know, you can do that and quickly overcommit or overextend yourself, which is where we kind of started the podcast. And so learning how to say no, you know, the right way and focus my time, energy, and effort on things that are going to help me get where I want to go, and being very specific and clear about that, I think is really, really important. So that's something I've improved in considerably in over the last 12 or 18 months. And it's fueled both my passion, my time for myself, and creative energy in my business.
Well, I am so thankful that you said yes to being a guest on my podcast. And I wanted to ask you to tell the audience, where can people go to learn more about you?
Yeah, RyanEstes.com is the place. So, you know, that's the blog. That's the website. And I've got a pretty active live event schedule. You know, this year I'll do another 70 events. So hopefully I'll get to meet a bunch of your listeners on the road somewhere in person. But RyanEstes.com is the spot.
Awesome. So check out Ryan's site, his blog, and all the other, he has some really great resources, not just for salespeople, but for people who are looking about to grow their business, to change their organization, to infuse passion in the workplace. Lots of good stuff over there. I want to thank Ryan for joining the Workology podcast, and thank you for listening. This is Jessica Miller Merrill, and this is the podcast where we discuss the science and art of the workplace, HR, and recruitment. Until next time, you can go to bloggingforjobs.com to listen to all previous episodes of our podcast. Thank you. Talk to you soon.
Production services for the Workology podcast with Jessica Miller Merrill provided by Total Picture Media.